What is up, everyone? Welcome to Toffee Blues USA, your source for all things Everton American style, which usually means without the cool British accent. We don't have the cool British accent today either, but we are going to be reaching into a different region of the States, which we haven't done before, which is super exciting. Today, we've got Jordan Sanchez joining us from Vice City Evertonians. Jordan, it's nice to meet you, man.
It's nice to meet you, too, and thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah, man, very cool. So, Jordan, Vice City Evertonians, let's talk Miami Everton support. So, just out of curiosity, the first thing I thought of, because immediately we were talking about the heavy Spanish-speaking representation in Miami, how big of an influence on the Everton support in Miami was the James Rodriguez signing? Like, was it impactful at all? I mean, you got a friggin' sign on the coast. Was it like as big a deal as I was hoping it was?
Well, to be honest, as far as like what was going out on the streets, which Miami is very much a street party town. Like one of our local teams wins a championship, let's say the Heat or the Marlins, people are out on the streets hitting their pots and pans and going nuts. That's awesome. Granted, we're in the middle of a pandemic right now, so right. Things are a little bit more tempered. So the only way I could really measure the excitement was on social media, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, based on what I saw on social media, it was pretty wild. I mean, we have a big Colombian population here, big giant Colombian community here, along with Brazilian and other South American communities as well. And it was just amazing to see how many messages came into to our socials. Lots of direct messages, lots of mentions and stuff through Twitter. And we did see an uptick in membership at Vice City just based on the James signing.
Wow, that's awesome. I was curious about that because you make assumptions, but I feel like you're like so much more strategically placed to answer that kind of question than Goofy Jerry in North Carolina, who's just like, it seems like it's right, but yeah, somebody who's actually there would know. But you're right. I mean, because I was going to be like, you know, when it's not pandemic time, do you have like a meetup place, or is it mainly one of those things where y'all gather more online, or like how do Vice City Evertonians actually function?
So we do have a meetup spot. It's the Old Dubliner in downtown Miami. It's a really, really central bar, and it's considered the city's soccer bar. Mm-hmm. The bartender there, his name is James. I have to give a big shout out to him. He's a Manchester United supporter, but we'll forgive him. We'll forgive him for that. but he's so cool. He's originally from Ireland. And he was the bartender at one of the biggest soccer pubs in the south of the United States, mm-hmm. Here in Miami. And when that suddenly closed down, soccer fans in the area, which Miami is a pretty big soccer town. Granted, we've only had a professional soccer team or an MLS team for 1 year. But we do have a huge, huge following of you know, the Colombian national team, the Brazilian national team, even the German national team. A lot of German Bundesliga teams have good representation here, being a multicultural city. James was the guy that brought all those soccer supporters to the Old Dubliner. So the cool thing about that spot is that if I show up with, you know, my little contingent of Evertonians, we're going to see some Chelsea supporters. We're going to see some Arsenal supporters. We're going to see some Newcastle supporters hanging out, either going into the game or coming out of another match. And I usually get to mingle with the Chelsea guys because I know some of them. And it's just a really cool spot to just talk football, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why I love the Old Dubliner. We also have a member, a new member, who's originally from Merseyside. He's a little bit north in the Broward County area, and he has like a home pub. So if ever we have some sort of like cool, usually it's the later games where he's down to do it. We sometimes go to his house and nice. Watch it at his home pub, and it's all Everton based, all Everton themed. It's really cool.
That is cool. That's great, man. Yeah. So you mentioned, I'm going to get into Everton in just a second, but just to kind of throw it out there, anybody in the Miami area, Vice City Evertonians. You got to be following that account so that you can touch base with all that. That just, yeah. And you'll see Jordan's Twitter credentials down there as well. Should be right there below his head somewhere, graphic wise. Yeah. So really quick, just gauging when Inter Miami came to town, were you an Everton supporter before that? And were you thinking, you know what, we've got a club in town, I need to at least support my local a little bit? Or were you like, nah, it's all Everton and that's all I got? How did you approach all that?
So my primary club is Everton. I would always support Everton first, but I love Miami sports in general. I'm a huge Heat fan. I'm a huge Miami Dolphins fan, huge Marlins fan. And I actually love this particular kit from Everton because it reminds me of the University of Miami, Hurricanes. Yes. Same color. So I love sporting it.
As soon as you said it, I was like, okay, that makes total sense now.
Yeah. It's almost identical in the color scheme. Yeah. But you know, I love Inter Miami. I've been watching how the saga unfold. I don't know how familiar you are with the whole David Beckham looking for a stadium, looking for land. And it's still a work in progress. I mean, the final product, they want to move this team, the stadium from Fort Lauderdale, where it currently is, to Miami, right next to Miami International Airport. But of course, you got politics involved and all that stuff. And I, from the beginning, I've been always supporting Inter Miami for that. And I hope they could finally kind of like get into cruise control, because even when it came down to picking a manager and the players, they had so many players picked out before they even had a manager. They brought the manager on board and then they had to unload some other players. So it really has been quite the journey. We didn't do as well as I hoped this year, even though we did make the playoffs, which is great. But yeah, I really, really pull for them. But overall, Everton is my primary.
Yeah, that's kind of I asked that because, you know, we just recently got Charlotte FC in North Carolina, which, you know, obviously they haven't kicked the ball yet. Only the academy teams have played. And, you know, I want to support that as much as I can. But I'm also just kind of thinking, like, Everton is strong right here. You know what I mean? I'm trying to think about how to nestle something anywhere near it. And it's kind of difficult. So, you know, I guess maybe it's like, don't try to, like, replace or try to – just have it a different kind of love and let it happen naturally. And there you go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's the way to go. And it's good for the town, you know, like I love Miami as a city. It is a love or hate city. Some people like it, some people don't. I happen to love it. And anything that's good for the city and good to build the culture and to highlight the culture, because you know, obviously Inter Miami has a huge Latin American contingency. Even all the songs that are sung at the games, they're mostly in Spanish. Like 99% of them are Spanish. So I think that's a cool thing to be proud of as a Miami resident, as a citizen of Miami. You know, I think Inter Miami has an opportunity to make Miami very proud, and even the supporters clubs for Inter Miami have a really big opportunity just to showcase Miami at the world stage.
That's awesome. How long have you been in Miami?
I was born and raised in Miami. I mean, I lived out in New York City for a few years for college. I went to Fordham University. Shout out to Fordham EFC.
I have a Fordham hat in my house that I've had for years, but it's for very shameful reasons. It was my brother's. And it says FU.
FU, there you go, FU. I have an FU
hat. And I haven't worn it since I've, like, had kids. And it's, like, buried underneath all my other hats because I'm, like, yeah, I wore my FU hat for a while. It's the first time I've told anybody about it.
I have my very own FU hat as well. It's funny because Fordham has another thing that they have that's kind of, like, it has to do with, like, I guess an alliteration of cursing, or they have a chant that was notorious back when Fordham first started. It was one damn, two damn, three damn, four damn.
Ah, that works all right. That's nice.
Yeah, the Archdiocese of New York, when that happened back in the day, it had to have been around Lombardi's time when Lombardi was there. They actually kind of like had to like publicly denounce that chant. And of course, as college kids, what are you gonna do, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, yeah. they're that would almost make them want to do it more, I would think. So yeah.
For sure.
So I guess the big question that I always ask, because it's a question I get asked all the time, is how is Jordan down in Miami an Everton supporter?
So I think it all comes down to I dubbed this that summer the summer of soccer. What year was that? The year that Tim Howard in the World Cup broke the saves record. Mm-hmm. Which was great because you saw Tim Howard go against his teammate Romelu Lukaku and Kevin Morales too. Mm-hmm. And that was awesome. I mean, that one big soccer bar that I had mentioned before would get packed, and not just for the Team USA games. It was pretty much for any match, like any World Cup match. And I just started like realizing, man, you know, soccer is such a big part of this town without a team. And what would it be like to follow soccer the way I follow, say, basketball or American football? And I started getting into, you know, what clubs I could follow. I was kind of partial to the Premier League because of the ease of watching the matches. They were all on TV already. And just Tim Howard was a beast that summer. And I was like, you know, I'm going to follow Tim Howard's team. What club does he play for? Okay, Everton. Cool. I've heard of the squad, but it's not one of the big Manchester United, Liverpool, right? And I was doing – I even went on Facebook and I was like, guys, give me your best pitch for what club I should support. And preferably something with, you know, an American link, right? And obviously Everton was mentioned. Liverpool was mentioned because of the ownership group.
Right.
Fulham was mentioned at the time Clint Dempsey was there.
Right.
So I was leaning towards one of the bigger clubs. And as I started, like, kind of scouring through Facebook and YouTube for cool videos of the histories of these clubs, I stumbled upon some Everton videos. I was like, this is the one. This is the club right here.
That's great.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that just kind of felt right at that point, and you just needed that extra little nudge because you were already going that way?
The way I like to say it is, you know, they say Evertonians are born and not manufactured. So I was born an Evertonian. I just didn't realize it until later.
Nice. I like it, man. So I guess currently, who's your favorite current player?
Currently, I have to say Richarlison. I just love the attitude. Granted, people don't like that he kind of falls a lot, right? but you know, that's the game, man. If they don't reward that, then it wouldn't happen so much. But you know, they reward. And I will say this: he gets targeted a lot and doesn't get him any calls. So you know. but I just love his athletic ability. It just, to me, it reminds me a lot of the players that people here in Miami like. When I hear players named from, you know, people that play soccer here at the pitches. We have a lot of pitches here in Miami where you see a lot of pickup games go on, and it just reminds me a lot of the players that people mention. Obviously, you got your Messis, you got your given the big Argentinian community here, you got James. James is to me, James, I think, is the number one soccer star in Miami. Wow. Yeah, and it's like you'll walk around and you'll see James jerseys, James Colombian jerseys, and it's crazy. But I think Richarlison just reminds me of one of those dominant, like, athletic, scoring type of dynamic players. And you know, I like his social media presence as well, especially recently when he kind of clapped back at a few people with some awesome gifts. That was great.
Yep. I agree. I also thought that was great. yeah, it's the thing about, you know, Richarlison, he's a goal scorer, but I also like the fact that I feel like he's going to have swagger, and it doesn't matter who he's playing. It just doesn't matter. You know, he could be playing against the best team in the world, and he's still going to have some kind of attitude, some kind of almost impudence. There's mm-hmm. something kind of like instigator about him. I like the way, like when you watch the Brazilian All or Nothing on Amazon, where he's just sitting there like talking trash to Ederson when he's like playing keeper, and he ends up like ticking him off, and he like Ederson like charges him in the locker room and everything, and you're just like, that just, he's just like a prankster, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's somebody, he's not, he's also going to sit there and bleed for the club.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So that's the main thing. I love the passion that he has for the club. Always touching the badge and always showing love to whatever end that he scores. And he's always, mm-hmm. always addressing the crowd when there was a crowd. And that just, to me, that just shows like, you know, you understand what it is to play for a club like Everton, and that's mm-hmm. important.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. So I think this may be the last Everton-based question. I always ask this because I, for some reason, I think it's an interesting question. If you had to say one all-time Everton player, could be current, could be last year, could be 10 years ago, doesn't matter, 20 years ago, whatever. One Everton player is like, okay, that's Jordan's personality. Oof. Okay? Like the person that matches your personality, the former Everton player, where you're like, yeah, that's the guy that matches me. Who would you say is your personality doppelganger?
That's a great, great question. You know what? I want to say, can I do like a combination of two players? Because
are you doing
a combo
experimentation on humans here? Like,
it's like a lab. It's like a lab experiment here. I would say I'm like a combination of like Neville Southall as far as how vocal I am, uh-huh. and Tim Cahill.
Wow. Oh my gosh! I feel like that hybrid would walk through walls.
I mean, I wouldn't say I would back it up on a soccer pitch, because I don't, you know, I never grew up playing soccer. But I know that I'm, you know, I'm not really like, if I were to play a little bit of footy, I would just be passionate. I'd be loud. I'd run my butt off just to get somewhere, and I'd have that little edge to me that Cahill had, who always had a little bit of edge to him. You know, nice. I love that in players, and I love that he could back it up too. It wasn't really a big smack talker, even though I'm sure he got his smack in, but he was tough when he had to be, and that's, I feel like I would at least want to be that way.
Yeah, I think about him, and I think about somebody who's willing to go up for a header. Number one, by the way, his leap. Holy crap.
Yeah.
But he's to go up for a header at a time, in certain areas where they're contested, and he doesn't care, not worried about it, going up and trying to win the tough 50-50s. And the guy could produce a highlight. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so could old Big Nev.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, that's like hybrid, by the way.
Yeah, I just like Nev's leadership, you know. I like and just him on Twitter as well. Just his, I like seeing people, you know, players with personality, and mm-hmm. I think the personality rubs off on me a little bit, so it makes me like kind of like fall in love with you as a player. So like I get partial to some players where, you know, maybe I shouldn't like them as much as I should, because maybe they're not performing as much on the pitch, but I don't know. I like to relate to people, and mm-hmm. You know, that's why I love Richarlison.
I love that. That's awesome. That human connection is, yeah, that's great. That's great. It's good reasoning, Jordan. I like it. So, gosh, it's really funny. I have a friend who laughs exactly like you, and it's totally tripping me out. It's just totally throwing me. I was like, oh my God, Jordan has Darren's laugh. That's so crazy. So last question after light stalking, and by light stalking I mean looking at your Twitter handle, I noticed you are a DJ.
Yes.
What kind of a DJ are you, and can you teach me something?
Give me
something to latch onto, because I worry, because I did look at some of your entries on Twitter, some of your posts, and I'm like, yeah, I don't understand the difference between those types of music, because I'm 42 and from North Carolina, and I have kids, and I'm like the not, I'm like the least cool person on earth. And so, but I may like it if I hear it. That's what I'm
saying. So talk to me. Yeah, I would consider myself what's called an open format DJ. So I started off as a hip hop DJ, and then I moved slowly into the dance music scene to the point where I even had my own morning show on local Miami radio, actually one of the biggest dance stations in the country. Wow. So I would say I lean more towards dance, but I could pretty much DJ anything. But definitely like dance music, electro house, future house. Yeah. Definitely get into that. You know, a DJ duo from Merseyside, huge Everton supporters, Camel Fat.
Yeah.
Camel Fat is awesome.
Yes. I've actually heard of them.
Yeah, there you go. They're great.
Because they're Everton supporters. And then somebody did the, I think they did, there's a video for them for like Spirit of the Blues as well.
Yeah.
So I was just like, that's awesome. Yes. Yeah. So, yes. So you're saying Camel Fat's a good example of
what I DJ. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, would I even produce music? Also, I'd be remiss to if I didn't mention Anton Powers, another Evertonian DJ who actually DJed Jordan Pickford's wedding.
The rave on?
Yeah, he got Jordan Pickford specifically picked him because he was a dance DJ.
Yes. I had completely forgotten about Get the Rave On, but that is exactly, yes, that makes sense. That's great.
And another guy, another guy that actually is from Merseyside, who's not an Evertonian. He says he doesn't like football, but James Hype is actually one of the most talented DJs on the planet right now. Easily one of the most exciting guys. Amazing, amazing at the art of DJing. Definitely check him out. Another Liverpool DJ, super, super cool. That guy to me is top of the line as far as where I want to be, you know.
So if Old Man River here goes onto Spotify and puts these in, this will not be a problem, and it will come up.
Absolutely. I will say the best way to consume James Hype, though, specifically him, is to find him on YouTube uses with his hand, and he's just it's amazing. So definitely look up James Hype on YouTube. But other than that, Camel Fat and Anton Powers are the way to go when it comes to just, you know, nice electro or house music listening. It's good stuff.
That is great. Okay, very cool. Yes, so we've got some really good insight in not only into Jordan, into what Jordan does, what Jordan knows, what he's an expert of, but also Miami and Miami Evertonians. There's a lot here. This is great. Very cool intro, Jordan. I like it. All right, so we are going to move on and actually start talking about Everton stuff. So there's my first card. Gone. Flicked it. So what we're talking about here today for everyone, we've got a Leeds review. We've got a mailbag segment, and we're talking Burnley.
All right.
The nonstop thrill ride.
Yeah.
That is Burnley. So let's talk Leeds, because actually that match was sort of a thrilling match in terms of the chances. So spoiler alert, if you don't know the score by now, I'm sorry for you. But I just watched the match today because I was watching my kid play soccer all day on Saturday. But 1-0 loss. Mm-hmm. So I've got some talking points here, Jordan, and some of them are just player names. I have a list of player names because I feel like they're sort of like players that I've heard recent opinions about. It stuck out to me. And then I'll give you a couple other topics, and I'm just going to let you roll and talk about what you want. And then I'll butt in with my gray headed comments, and then we'll just keep going. We'll just play a little tennis, you know? So here we go. Talking points, Pickford, because I feel like every time he plays now, it's something we're talking about.
Absolutely.
Iwobi at left back, Davies at right back, Decore, how did that work out? He ended up playing a little right back near the end. It was kind of, strange game. Delf, Godfrey, Alan, and Andre Gomez. Those are the players that immediately I was like, we could have conversations about those players. Also, potentially talk about, was that a poor performance? Was that a fair result? Question mark. Also, you could talk about the formation and how that's working for us. Or if you just want to talk about the flow of the game, general thoughts, man. So,
yeah.
Where does Jordan want to start? I am curious.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm not a tactician in any sense of the word. Given my interest into soccer came in late, despite my dad always badgering me. By the way, a Cuban guy that likes soccer, my dad, that very rare to find. He would always tell me, "Dude, you would love." Football that he would watch the World Cup every time it came around. He even traveled in, it was in 92 when it was here in the United States. I was too young to remember. 92, 94.
Was it 94?
94, I think it was.
Because Italia was 90. So yes, the next one would 94. Have been 94 with the crazy denim U.S. national team jerseys that look like giant stars.
So, I mean, and I had this crazy resistance. So my interest in soccer came a little late. So forgive me if I am not the ultimate tactician.
You're good.
But I can say as far – I would like to talk about Pickford for sure. I think that's a good starting point because he seems to be – he seems to be taking a lot of heat lately. I didn't think he played horrendously. He had some really, really athletic saves. I think what hampers Jordan is his positioning. There are a lot of times where he gets caught out of position where he has to make adjustments, where if he's just a little bit more disciplined, he wouldn't need to make these super epic Superman saves or wouldn't have to concede really easy goals. And I think that is one of the main things that I was thinking about during the Leeds game. I don't want to blame him entirely. I mean, our defense in general it has not shown their A game in recent matches. So
yeah, they had a lot of opportunities, man.
Yeah,
a lot of opportunities.
It's just too much for even any goalkeeper to handle.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, and their goal, I think you could make, a bit of an argument for Jordan not having, like, Pickford not having seen the ball. I say Jordan, I'm talking to Jordan. Sorry, man. But, like, I should say Pickford, not be confusing. How about that? But, I think the ball's blocked a little bit. It looked like he got a late start on the save.
Yeah.
It was blocked a little bit. And so he didn't actually get going because as I was watching, I was like, oh, he's going to get to that because the ball was like hugging. But it didn't really hit the ground until, closer to the goal, which when I saw that certain angle, like beside the goal, you could actually see that it was kind of, only about that high off the ground, like for a while. And so it was actually hit with more pace than I think I realized, but I still think if he sees it coming off and he's in the right place, I think he makes that save.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It's not all his fault, but you could say that maybe he could have done a little better.
I just think you see the problems that his positioning gives him on the shots outside of the box, where he's conceding a lot of shots outside of the box because he's playing either too far forward or he's off his line or something positionally where he's just not up to the task of getting to a ball that's being shot from outside the box, which to me, I think those are the shots that you really have to rely on being on your line and being steadfast. And it just doesn't seem like he is getting there. Now, that being said, like I always want to hedge this because I'm not a tactician. I'm not out there. I'm not gonna make these saves that he is. He's a very athletic kid.
You're super still allowed to have an opinion.
It's okay, man. I understand. And, he's very athletic. The saves that he did make were incredible. Mm-hmm. I just think maybe he gets a little nervous with the defense, and I have to wonder, is it a communication thing? What's happening on that back line, communication-wise, that might be hindering his ability to feel confident in his positioning or feel confident in just relying on that back line to stop shots, because they're not stopping shots either. They're not playing good defense either. So, it's a systems issue as well as an individual issue.
Yeah. Do you feel like watching that, you know, Saturday's match against Leeds, do you think Pickford was necessarily a problem, or do you think he looked like a little sharper than he had before? Or would you say, you know what, this was more of a defensive issue than a Pickford issue?
I think Pickford had a bit of a problem on the one shot that he conceded the goal, but I think overall, just I guess in context, when you see it and you see how well our defense played, let's say the first game where we had a clean sheet, till where we are now, I think it's a downfall a little bit, and mm-hmm. I think it's primarily a defensive thing. It could also be like a depth thing, right? We kind of got a little exposed when we had injuries and when we have to rotate guys around. And it goes to show you that, you know, maybe Carlo isn't done adding bodies to the squad. And that also requires, letting go some guys, some dead weight. So, you know, this, to me, it just feels like it's an obvious project that's still in motion. And I think, you know, come January for the transfer window, we'll see that addressed. I, at least I'm assuming that's the case.
So you kind of tapped into something I've just been harping on all season, is our depth or lack thereof. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've had a really solid starting 11. And one of the things I was not worried about early on was a backup left back. We watched Nkuku play and we're like, yes, yes. Okay. And then he's not involved. And it's a strange thing, right? And we're all of a sudden we've got Iwobi playing left back in a back, yeah. It's technically a back five.
It's
a back three. Yeah. So it's a strange, I think our lack of depth is leading to us using these formations. Mm-hmm. It's really strange. So I agree with you. I fully agree with you. I think it's a depth thing more than anything. And I think because of that depth thing, there's discomfort and there's miscommunication. Mm-hmm. And put all that together, I just feel like if you've got our normal back four, there's far less far fewer communication issues.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. For sure.
So I got to agree with you on that, man.
Yeah. I mean, look at how they were basically in sync, almost perfect in those first few games. It was incredible to see. And the moment the weakness of depth gets exposed, how we look like we're scrambling, look like a little disorganized. I think the depth has to be addressed. It's definitely a glaring issue.
So Godfrey played, and at times I got to say, you know, he looked good, athletic. And then there were other times I'd say my biggest issue with Godfrey is, the fact that he's maybe a little naive. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? How do you feel overall performance and, you know, how would you rate how our new signing played in Godfrey?
I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt. He is a young player. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him learn the system more and maybe learn in a more stable way what the system is like, as opposed to adjusting to the five in the back or three in the back or the typical four in the back. I don't want to pass too much judgment just yet, because I feel like it might be, you know, it might be a disservice to him, particularly a young guy. Yeah. I like what I see athletically. The dude is strong. He's a young dude. He's very athletic. He makes good movements, but like you say, he's a little naive. Sometimes he may commit too much to something and then gets lost in the sauce a little bit.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying lost. It just made me smile. Sorry.
and then a little confusion too. Like you could see sometimes in his face where he's like, oh, I just messed up. I just say, you know, and it's like, you know, come on, kid. Like, you know, just get it together. You know, you're young, you got this. I really do hope to see him a little more, grounded. I already see what he can do athletically. I think he's good there. I want to see him on a discipline level, what he can do, how he can really hunker down, how he can shift according to the flow of the game. He seems to be a little shaky when strategy needs to shift. I think for him, hopefully, it's a matter of just getting used to Carlo's system.
Reminds me of Mason Holgate in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
The aggression is there. The aggression mm-hmm. is good. Love his aggression. Love his athleticism. Love his ball control. I think he really likes to be a part of the attack.
Yes.
To see him going forward. But there are times, and one in particular, gosh, it was one second half where he went forward and you're sitting there like, yes, a center back getting forward. That's awesome. And then he loses the ball, immediately leads to a counterattack chance mm-hmm. for Leeds, like right immediately. And then I thought he could have pressed the shooter. I thought he could have pressed Rafinha mm-hmm. on their goal.
He definitely could have closed out a little bit on that. Especially Rafinha, who everyone knows he's the danger man on that squad. You know, you can't give him that space.
Yeah. So I think experience, though, really. And I'm glad he's getting minutes. I agree. I wish he was getting minutes in one of our typical formations because that stability is just going to help the whole back line. Because I feel like with Godfrey, it's like, okay, he's filling in it in a back three. He's filling in it right back. You know, it's a lot of filling in when in reality, those are situations we don't want to be in.
Right.
We don't want him having to fill in it right back. We want, if he's playing, him to be in a back duo, you know, mm-hmm. Part of a back four. A center back duo, a back four. That's what I meant to say. So
yeah.
Just realized I was like, duo is not four, Jerry. I still like what I see from him. I think he's a good signing. I think he just needs minutes the way Holgate needed minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not ready to sit there and pin everything on one bad play. I think they had a lot of chances.
Yeah.
I thought we had a lot of chances. How do you think our performance was, like, overall? Like, if you were to sit there, if someone told you we won that game 1-0, would it surprise you? Or if it was 3-3, would that surprise you? It was a weird game, man.
I still have yet to, like, settle on my overall assessment on that match. Yeah. Like, where was our downfall? Was it in the formation? I don't know. Was it in the player performance? I don't know. I don't know what to attribute that loss to, because it was a weird game. So many chances. I mean, at halftime, I was like, why am I so pumped about this game? Why is it so exciting? Like, what is happening? It's 0-0. I'm watching this. I'm getting excited for, you know, every few minutes or so for a chance or a nice play or me getting really passionate about something bad that happened. So I'm thinking, where did we lose this game? And I still haven't made that decision. I mean, I have no idea. So if it was, you know, if it was 3-3, just judging by that first half, it could have easily been 3-3, right? Like, there were so many chances at both ends. And if we had won 1-0, I think that would have reflected similar. I just don't even know where, because 3-3, 1-0 for either side are very different results, but like, it could have, you know, those were all very possible outcomes in mm-hmm. such a weird game. And it's funny because, when they mentioned that Leeds had, I think they've been to Goodison 15 times and they've never won. The moment they said that, I was like, oh, here we go. Something's going to happen. Something's going to happen where, you know, that streak is broken. And sure enough, there you go.
Yeah. I feel like, number one, I felt like we were defensively sluggish up, like adjusting to their, to their movement, to their switching of fields. They switched fields so much, and I feel like our adjustment was just slow. That's one of the things you see Bielsa's squads. They move so well without the ball, and they're whipping the ball around, and they're constantly their flow is just it's entertaining. It's fun to watch, But I think because I think it's one of those things that because they work so hard without the ball when their team has the ball, that I think that tends to catch them out often when the other team finally gets it, and that leads to chances from the opposition. I don't know if we were defensively organized enough and sharp enough and ready enough for what they brought, like when it comes to speed of play, you know, not straight out deadline, you know, straight line speed. I mean, just whipping the ball around.
Yeah.
Cause you know, I feel like their chances, so many of their chances were across to the middle. It was their goal. Then they would whip it from one side to the left and Jack Harrison misses a close chance. And then they went, and then when they switch their attackers, they put Rafinha on one side, Jack Harrison on the other side, and then they slap across all the way, and he wins a header over Iwobi. By the way, Iwobi not winning a header is not surprising,
because yeah.
I don't see him as an aerial threat, you know?
Definitely. But,
so it's just, it was a lot of switching point of play. Yeah. And I think an unorganized defense that feels uncertain is going to get – and we just gave up too many opportunities.
Yeah, you know, I think we played into their hands. Yeah, we played into their hands, right? Well, that uncertainty, that sluggishness is perfect for a squad like Leeds that plays like that, where they – that ball was moving, man. When they had that ball, was moving. So it was – you know, it had to be a little overwhelming for the defense to see that, especially Davies and Iwobi. At the wings there, you know, they're probably running their butts off back and forth and thinking, boy, what do I got to do to stop this ball from going to the box? You know,
it's funny. Like Iwobi, I thought, I definitely wanted to talk Iwobi and Davies and what you thought about their performances. It was interesting. Iwobi, like I didn't think he defended poorly, like straight man-to-man defense, but doing those things that an outside back would normally do, like blocking crosses, I thought he struggled there. Winning the balls in the air, he struggled there. There was just some stuff that it's hard to expect him to do perfectly because he doesn't practice them all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought they straight up, like, attacked Davies in the beginning. Like, they were like, let's go left and run it right at that kid,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a way for them to catch him out of position, right? He was playing something, a position where he's a little weaker at. Mm-hmm. He had to play, you know, he had to get back on defense a lot more. He has to cover a little bit more ground. Yeah. So what's the best way to attack him is to see how they could catch him off guard. And especially a player who's not used to playing that position. That was, you know, it unfortunately, what were we going to do? Right. What were we going to do to stop that? Because again, the depth issue, what are you going to do? Like, but you know, when, if I'm Leeds, that's exactly how I play that game. That's exactly how I play that match.
Agreed. I'm totally with you there. And to be honest with you, I don't think Davies did a poor job. Like, I didn't finish that match and say, wow, what a weak spot.
Right. Yeah.
You know, which I'm glad. Yeah. I was worried that he would be exploited speed wise. I was worried they were going to be just blow by him. That was my biggest concern. Mm-hmm. That they were. But honestly, they did so much bringing the ball in and then cutting it in centrally.
Yeah.
They just did so much of that he didn't really get burned for pace on the wing that much at all.
Right.
So I thought he and Iwobi did not as well as you can expect, but I didn't sit there and like, you know, cuss them out, you know, during the game or anything, you know.
Right.
You know, it could have been a lot worse.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Who was your performer? If you think about somebody who you're like, okay, that was my favorite player in that game. That was the player I thought really came through for Everton. Who's your guy?
I think, and not just this match, but definitely other matches, as Alan. Alan is just an anchor.
Mine too, dude.
Yeah. He's really the anchor to our squad. He's in that midfield, in that defensive side of the midfield, just holding everything down. Mm-hmm. He's not the fastest guy on the field, But he's a shifty little dude, man. And he knows how to keep possession of the ball. He knows how to take the ball away, first of all. And he knows how to keep it. And then he knows how to develop something from that, you know?
His speed of thought is just so quick, man.
It's incredible that he – it's so crazy how he's immediately on to what the players on the sides are doing as far – you know, how – even their pace and where they're moving. He just knows immediately. He's just – his soccer IQ is through the roof. He is probably our if I have to be impartial about it, he might be our best player, to be honest.
Yeah, I finished that one. It was actually the first match this season where I said he's my standout guy this time.
Yeah.
You know, just in it, I don't know if it was it wasn't just the fact that he was carrying the ball forward. But he was carrying the ball forward. He was actually a threat.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is not something you see from him often. Yeah. And that was refreshing. It was cool. But, to be honest, just the idea – he does – the way he plays, I feel like he does what I used to think Tom Davies did really well until I saw Alon do it better.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Just the way he uses his body, and he's quickly – just distributing passes, one touch play, sometimes really quick two touch play. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy. I just think his brain works so much faster than so many other players. It was refreshing to see that. And it's a friggin' shame that we didn't get a result after a performance like that.
Yeah.
Who is somebody who, and we got to move on soon, but who was somebody where you were like, where you thought, you know, I was a little disappointed in this game.
Maybe.
Not to dwell on negative stuff, but you know.
Yeah. Maybe Holgate. I don't want to say maybe Holgate did a terrible job, but I think he needs to do better. I think that, you know, that again, it's the back five / back three thing that I think may give him a little bit of a problem mentally, and the idea that maybe what he has to do back there might change based on that formation. But I just feel like he is such an athletic guy. He's such a he's such a forceful guy back there that I feel like he could string some matches together where he puts in some amazing minutes, and sometimes I'm just left like, huh, you know, Holgate, all right, you know, and you know, you see him. He's an athletic dude. He. Don't get me wrong. There were some moments where I'm like, good job, Holgate. But there were some moments where I'm like, come on, you know, you gotta be a little bit better. I don't know if there's anybody that particularly did horrendous.
I don't think there's any horrendous.
Yeah,
I just think.
I just think there's some people that need to step up a bit more. Just step up to their potential. I think, you know, guys like even Richarlison, his first game back, I think he could have done something dynamic to change the pace and to even get on the score sheet.
He had so many shots.
Yeah.
He had so many opportunities.
And nothing to show for it.
We have got to – I mean, honestly, I think he just needs to get – we need to set him up something easy
and get him going,
break through and get the flow going, you know what I mean. I will say one of my favorite players this season has been Decore. And just energy wise I feel like, you know, we've been missing somebody who does what he does. He does push the ball forward. He's an absolute energy bomb when he's in there. He's winning the ball often. I love him. I thought he gave the ball away a little too cheaply.
Yeah.
I was a little sloppy in possession. Even though, I mean, he almost scored early on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I thought we asked him to do some different stuff. Yeah, I know. But that was the one where I was thinking, you know, I expect him to take care of the ball a little better.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of shrug-worthy performances, like with Holgate you're mentioning.
Yeah.
And 1 second with Delph, I'm like, oh yeah, way to use your body. Oh, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of that.
Yeah, that's exactly what, you know, and it's just moments, right? These guys, they put in good shifts, but then they have their little moments where it's like, man, what is happening? And I guess, you know, a match comes down to those moments, though. You know,
yes,
you
got it.
And that, I feel like that ultimately comes down where you, when you step up to those moments, it comes mental fortitude. And again, going back to the depth and the formation issue, how much did that affect the squad going in where they knew this is not our usual formation? We have a depth issue. We have to figure something out to make it work. How much did that play into the mediocre performances or the very average performances?
Yeah. I will say I was glad it wasn't a Pickford mistake that led to their goal.
Yeah.
So, you know, anything kind of like, I hate they scored on him because I want him to start building that confidence up. I really do. Because I think there are times where I've just heard certain football fans out at the bar, you know, where they almost want players that are doing poorly to do super poorly to prove them right. So that their replacement will come in and they've been pointing, you know, and, you know, I can't necessarily point to any Everton supporters that I know that immediately like that, but I've just been next to some before at bars. And I'm just not that guy when it comes to this situation. I want Pickford to – do I think he could continue to use some sharpness? Yeah. I think he's taken the Everton starting spot for granted a bit, which has led to some mental lapses and concentration issues. But I don't necessarily – I don't think we lost because of Pickford, which is cool.
Yeah.
It's nice. Do I think maybe he could have done better on the goal? Maybe. But joint effort, we could have closed that down a little bit better. But they just have so many darn chances, man. They had so many chances, even in the first half.
Yeah.
All right.
That first half was wild. It was too crazy. Wild. Yeah.
And it was, I mean, and it was for a neutral fan, what a watchable game.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
But I'm sitting there like, you know, butt chase clinched. You know what I mean? Just like, oh,
You
know, it's
there's
so
a lot
much
of those
of
moments. Yeah, there was a lot of those moments. And to me, that's just a reflection of the defense, right? Like, you can't, the defense has to be a little bit better. Maybe, you know, the entire back line, I think, could have done better, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Entire back line, and I would even push that even farther out to the entire squad being able to adjust to that formation and kind of just adjust to their movement, ball movement. It was a strange game, but I gotta be, I don't sit there and point fingers at Carlo right now.
Yeah.
I think he's doing what he feels like is the right thing to do to get us points.
Yeah.
And
to be fair, overall, we're, you know, granted we've lost quite a few games recently, but we're still not in a horrendous spot on the table. So. No.
Perspective.
There's a lot of doom and gloom happening, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, one win in the upcoming matches, and we're back on the grind, you know. Yeah. So,
I'm totally with you on that. I actually have seen a lot of, to be honest with you, people talk about some folks being super. I have actually seen a lot of voices of reason on Twitter, like on social media, people coming out and saying, "Hey, we're thin."
Yeah.
We're thin player-wise, and we're having to adjust, and it's tough, and we got some inexperienced players, and a lot of players playing positions there that are not theirs. You know, and to be honest with you, that was not an awful performance.
No. And it's early. It's early in the season still. Yeah. We got a lot of time. We have a lot of time. We still have the January transfer window, which I think, you know, granted, last year Carlo didn't do much in January. Mm-hmm. But I think Carlo has a plan. He wanted to see how the squad would work through that window, then come in, have a real window, a real summer window. And then now he's able to, you know, move the chess pieces around. And, I mean, I think it seems like it's working. Granted, another two losses in the next two games or three games, things could start getting a little hairy. But you know, we're not there yet, right? We're not. Mm-hmm. I don't want to analyze something that's not there. You know, today we're still eighth in the table. We're just a few, you know, we're a few points off one of those Europe spots. We're not in a terrible situation, right. and all we need to do is get a little confidence turnaround, and we're right back in the thick of things.
I mean, And I talk about how many chances we gave up. We did have a lot of opportunities to score goals.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And to be honest with you, I'll feel a little bit better about our team mentality when we start finishing those.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and not having that little freeze up that makes us put it right at the keeper the last second. You know?
That was a lot of those. I were like two particular. I was like, right at him. Come on, that's just, yeah. Just a little, get a little touch on it, you know.
Yeah, but I think more experience in front of goal for some of them. But for now, for interestingly enough, for Richarlison, I think I hope it's not getting in his brain the fact that he hadn't scored for a little while.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just starts messing with your psychology a little bit. But for me, it's just like. Richarlison is just such like a chill guy. Yeah. I'm trying to imagine him being anxious, and I'm just like,
it's not hard. Possible. Yeah.
It's so hard for me to see. Yeah. If it was me, yes, Richarlison.
Yeah, you know, I'm hoping the same thing. I feel like he's one of those dynamic players, which is one of the reasons why I like him. Another guy that probably should have done better was James. To be honest, James could have done a lot better. Yeah, obviously his passing is just chef's kiss passing.
Yes,
that
yes.
Never goes away. He gave the ball away. He looked a little lost. He didn't look comfortable in that system, and he didn't know kind of what to do a little bit, or at least that's what it seemed like. Mm-hmm. These are guys that have only played, you know, so many matches with the squad. Richarlison and James together, how long have they been together? It takes time to build these types of relationships. I feel confident that this is going to start gelling. I mean, you see some gelling, but you also see the weaknesses that we have that can be addressed, which when they get addressed, there needs to be another period of gelling together with these with new players coming in. So it's a work in progress. I don't see myself getting mad maybe I would not like to finish eighth, but around this area, I can't really be too upset about it. Mm-hmm. Right. I would like a spot of Europe though, to be quite honest. I think we can do it.
Yes, I agree. I do agree with that. I think if this were a house, trying to think of a good analogy, I feel like foundation wise, we're doing okay. Got a decent foundation. I feel like you look from the outside at that house and you're like, you know, that house is all right. It's got decent curb appeal,
yeah.
You know, but structurally you scratch, you scratch the surface and you start realizing that maybe, you know, yes, it stands up and yes, it looks okay from the curb, but it still has a ton of issues that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
And that's true. And we haven't really had, I mean, what are we going to do? Are we going to buy 11 players at once? No.
Yeah.
Because any team that does that, it's way too much turnover. It's absolute chaos. Dogs and cats living together. Totally. So it's a process. I got to agree with you, man. I'm still pretty optimistic.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I just have to be. Kind of keep things in perspective and think, you know, Luka Dean and Seamus Coleman are playing. How are we doing right now? But they're not.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. And that's another guy that, you know, it's funny because we start realizing who you miss when they're out.
True.
Luka Dean is one of those guys, man, that he is one of the dynamic players on our squad that when he's out, it's hard to fill those shoes. So what are you gonna do? You gotta change formation. You know, you gotta change formations. And that changes the dynamic of everything that you're trying to do, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard. But you know what? You know, Carlo knows what he's doing. Let's be honest, right? Like the dude comes from Real, the dude comes from Napoli, has a great pedigree. I'm not gonna sit here and be like, he's doing a terrible job, because you know, who am I? I'm just a kid from Miami, you know?
I think you're allowed to critique.
Sure.
Even if it's Carlo, you're allowed to. It doesn't mean that you think he's wrong for the job.
Sure.
If you think he made a wrong decision, cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He may have gotten some of this stuff wrong.
For sure. Absolutely.
You know, he may have, but can I sit there and see the reason behind the decisions? Yeah. I can see reason behind it.
Oh yeah. I see why he went with the formation. Yeah. Absolutely. That's another thing is I'm not really feeling like doom and gloom when something like that happens for Everton where we have to change. I'm like, oh, here we go. Another invention from Carlo. I don't feel that way. I'm always feeling like, oh, I see what he's addressing. I see what he's trying to do. He's got a system and he knows how to bring out plays from his players, at least from his point of view. Mm. It's got to be then translated on the pitch, you know?
It's funny. I did have a little bit of doom and gloom when I saw the lineup, only because, and I'm going to throw this note card because I feel like this is a great transition to the first mailbag question. So, from Twitter, this is my doom and gloom relates to one of these players, especially from John Diazzo. Why is there not any transparency on the health of players and why they're not playing? Especially talking about Anthony Gordon and Nkunku, it's killing me. So that's what John says. And I got to be honest, when I saw that Nkunku was not playing, because I've been really excited to watch that guy play again.
Yeah.
And so right now we're wondering, is he hurt? Or is it because Carlo feels like other players are training better? Is it feel like other players are giving us a better opportunity to score, to win, to get points? Does he trust other players more? I don't know. And so why do you think there isn't as much transparency on what's going on with Anthony Gordon and Nkunku? And just those are just two examples. Maybe there's more.
Right? Yeah. Honestly, I don't know the answer to that question. You know, Carlo's a guy when he's in his press conferences, he's like quick, short, you know, like, no, it's because, you know, his little thing. It's like, is it an Italian thing? Is it like him like being like, it's my job. It's my job. Is it that? Is it that maybe he doesn't want to give away something to the opposition or someone? I don't know. I really don't know. And that's something that does bother me as well. And I think it's also like, to me in general, I always think like, why is like soccer news when it comes to injuries in general, not just on Everton, why is it so different from American sports, where we have a did not play, we have doubt in American football, we have questionable, doubtful, out. You know, we have three classifications for different
unless it's
injuries.
The Patriots, unless it's true. The Patriots, and then they're like, oh, he's got an ankle, it's an ankle every time.
You know, there's and in soccer, it's like, he suffered a hamstring injury yesterday, which we just found out a day later. You know, like it's stuff like that. It's like, what is it about this sport, or you know, the culture behind the sport, where it's like, none of this is like disclosed until a press conference or something, you know, whereas I know the moment a Miami Dolphins wide receiver gets injured, the moment it happens, I have a video of it when it happens in practice or in the game or something, you know, and in football, Luka Dean gets injured in practice. What were the circumstances behind that? Who did it? First of all, who did it? Because like, who's playing too rough out there that they're messing with our starting left back? And I just don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
So, I have a few thoughts and theories here.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Humor me. Humor, for sure. You know, so he usually discusses and discloses injuries in press conference, right? It's usually all the applicable players, and I don't think he mentioned either one of those players.
Right. Yeah.
But he mentioned like Gbamin, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, and that's a player who hasn't played in a long time. Mm-hmm. So, I'm thinking that their absence is not injury based. Okay, I think it's not about their health. I think it may be down to tactics or down to man management. All right. Yeah. So if he genuinely thinks this is the best thing that's best for our team, this gives us the best chance to win points, then he's going to go with it, right? Regardless. And if he thinks I can trust Iwobi more for some reason on the left rather than Nkunku. So I always go back to training. You know, is Iwobi giving everything in training every single time? Is he giving everything? And maybe Nkunku is not sharp every time. Maybe he's young and in the clouds sometimes, because sometimes that's the way it is,
yeah.
You know? And maybe he's giving everything, but he's making silly mistakes in practice. And maybe Iwobi is not, all right? Maybe it, so Carlo's going to know. I don't like making assumptions about players' effort,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff, because then it's just like, oh, maybe Anthony Gordon not trying, because I see videos of that kid training and he's a freaking beast.
He's a beast, yeah.
I can't imagine
a
scenario where he's not trying, but maybe there's something that's not, maybe it's a chemistry thing on the field with certain other players. But I think it does have to do, I think it is a Carlo decision, and I don't think it's injury based.
No, I agree with you on that front. You know, maybe it has to do with he doesn't want to plug in these young guys that may have their confidence shaken in a system where they might not play the next match that they do play. Mm-hmm. That kind of inconsistency, he may think, is going to ruin their confidence. Mm-hmm. So,
and if you say that kind of thing, if you say, I don't think they're training well. I don't think, you know, they work well with the other players right now as well as the other. You do that kind of thing?
Yeah.
It's cracking confidence. It's devaluing players.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Help people all of a sudden, rumors start getting started about these players who are probably awesome. They're probably great locker room people. You know what I mean? But rumors get started, silly stuff, you know, starts flying around. So that's why, like, I would just say that it's a Carlo decision. I don't think it's injury-based. And it may have something to do with him feeling more comfortable with older players for one reason or another.
Yeah.
I think that's a safe thing to say without getting a stupid rumor mill started.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's about right. I think it might be much ado about nothing when it comes to maybe that kind of stuff.
Good point.
You know, again, we have a thin squad, so we kind of need to know where they stand. But at the same time, you know, again, man management. We got a lot of matches coming up. We may need those guys, like need them.
That's interesting. I just thought about the man management thing. The idea of maybe he also feels like the older players are good examples in the locker room and giving them more responsibilities right now. Maybe he feels like the younger players need to cut their teeth a little more to be able to earn their way in and things like that. There could be all these kind of man management things, you know what I mean?
It's
all
also kinds of things. It's also where his mentality is as far as planning. Is he thinking long-term? Is he thinking my job is on the line? I don't think he's thinking that. Is he thinking really long-term, like 2 years down the line, three years down the line? What is his idea when it comes to that? It's just, I think that all that goes into play. And another thing, like how you said, like if he says, yeah, I don't like how they're training in a press conference, that's terrible. But then if you also give up, you know, they're not ready, or, you know, they're not ready, I don't want to give them the opportunity yet. Like, you know, what does that do to them as well?
Yeah. Totally. So I think no comment is actually a smart plan.
Yeah. Yeah. I think really. So too. Yeah.
So it's, although it may be frustrating for us, and John Diazzo just saying, I'm with you. I would love to see those kids play. I'd love to see them given opportunities, just even sporadically, just get out there and just see that they're electric players. They're so fun to watch. I mean, Nkunku getting like back heel assists, and Anthony Gordon being one of the few players that goes vertical for us. And I want to watch him play. But the way Carlo is handling it, at least from a man management standpoint, it does make sense. And I think we're both in agreement. It's not an injury thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Like it. All right, from Instagram, we've got a question coming in from Cody Corns. What do you think about the Luka Dean injury? And is it bad for us? And I just have to give a big yes. I'll just cut you off right there, Jordan. I said, yes. Yeah, it's a bad one.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's a worse one than I expected because I thought Nkunku was more ready.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's another one that exposes our weakness in the depth, in the depth field, right? You know, I briefly mentioned it with Luca, and I want to know, you know, again, one of those things where you want to know more of the circumstances. Granted, it's not going to change anything, right? What me knowing it is not going to do a damn thing about what happened. But it's Luca Dean. Luca Dean has been one of the most consistent players since he has arrived. And he has been one of the playmakers. Really, he's the guy that starts a lot of the plays. He pushes the ball forward. He knows how to pass. He knows how to switch play. His free kicks are just spot on. He knows how to cross the ball. This is the guy that is creating lots of chances. Creating. You know, moving the ball down or even just off the ball, he knows what he's doing. That's a big, big loss. Really, really big loss.
He's like our chance creator from the left side when it comes to playing balls in the box. You know, what Hamas does from this side, Luka Dean's doing from the other side. And it's one of the great joys in life to watch Hamas receive the ball, pivot, slap it across the Luka Dean, him press forward and play a ball across to Calvert-Lewin, who just says, you know, I'm just going to play this in with, you know, my man bun. You know, it's a wonderful thing to watch. And when you're lacking that, that's one of the things when you have it, like, let's say Iwobi can scrap all he can playing 1v1 defense. And he tried really hard. And I feel like I like Iwobi more than a lot of other people do. But he's not left-footed. I watched him try to put a left-footed cross in early in that match. Leeds, it went out of bounds. Yeah. It didn't go well. It's not his strong foot. It's just not what Iwobi does, is play crosses in with his left. And we've seen it in the past before too, man. To see a non-left-footed player play left back, all right, even if it's left wing back, I don't want to sit there and give anybody nightmares to our past. But when we had Cuco Martina playing at left back, defensively, he was pretty sound. But every single time we made a run up the left side, he would have to stop, play the ball to his right foot, and then play a cross in with his right. And we lost time, and defenders caught up, windows closed, and it was just not a functioning, high-functioning attack when you have a non-left-footed player playing on the left. It's tough when it comes to a left back, especially when you rely on for those quick balls in.
Yes, which is what Luka Dean is an expert at. And you lose that one element to the game, and it's one of your biggest chance creators, right? It's gone.
And the other thing that I mentioned that Iwobi's not great at is in the air. I think people really, really underestimate what Luka Dean can do in the air in terms of clearances. He is really good with his head. He is very good aerially, and it's the kind of thing. Like, I remember when I was first watching tape of him at Roma and Barcelona, when we were thinking about getting this guy, and that was one of his strengths. Yeah. He was good in the air. Yeah. And I was surprised to hear that. And then when I watched him play, I was like, wow, this guy actually is pretty aware and pretty savvy in clearing the ball out. That chance that Jack Harrison got over Iwobi that hit the right post. It doesn't happen if Dean's in.
Yeah.
It just doesn't.
That's the thing. He's just very savvy. He just feels, it feels like he's in his home when the ball's in the air, when he's trying to whip it over. It's like, that's his wheelhouse, man. And it's just, I have every confidence in the world that he's going to do something right with the ball when he's in that position. And I can't say I have the same confidence with anyone else playing that position, at least in the squad, you know?
Yeah. Total agreement on all that. So Cody, the Luka Dean injury, I will say, if this was a month ago when I have a lot more confidence that Nkunku is going to be part of the plans, I would not be as upset about that. But when I found out he wasn't going to be part of the plans on Saturday, that was when the doom hit, because I was like, oh, wow, Carlo, for some reason, doesn't think he's right for this match. And if he's not right for this one, I'm not sure when he's going to be right for a Premier League match.
Yeah.
So is it weird? Yeah. Anyway, it's awful timing, especially with Seamus Coleman out at the same time. Sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, we're all crying, Cody Corns.
Yeah. That was sad.
Lastly, NWBFC asked a question that we've heard a little bit of in other forms, but this is slightly different wording, and it involves another player. If we signed Isco and Ntiti in January, where do you think we'd finish?
Wow. I hate those prediction questions because then I say something and then someone's going to come on Twitter. You said we finished fifth. You're I hate you.
They would say you're not psychic and you don't know the future, Jordan. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know, you're not part of that group of superhumans. I thought you were. You're only cool. You're not also super. I'm sorry. Nah, man. Here's the thing. We make predictions on these all the time, and guess how many are right? Almost none of them. Almost none of them. The way I figure, man, you make a prediction like this, as long as you can say why,
yeah,
giving
exactly.
People conversation fodder.
I think Isco, a guy like Isco, you know, maybe a little bit past his prime, a little, you know, he's a guy that is a great player. Like that's a player that you want. And even just for the presence, right? He's played with the best in the world. He's one of the best in the world at his position. Yeah. I think with Isco and Umtiti on the squad, I think we could finish. I think we could finish five. Just because and Umtiti is another fantastic player, and both of those guys address the depth issue big time. And it would plug the hole, and it would plug the hole with talented guys that are very dynamic and that Carlo can use to plug in whenever we do need to change formation, or whenever we have a guy like Luca Dean missing, or God forbid somebody else, someone like Isco is perfect to anchor everything, you know? Let's say Allen goes down. That would huge. That would be a huge issue. But having Isco to hold it all together seems a little bit better than anybody else on the squad that we have now, you know?
Yeah. So I agree, Isco. I'm still trying to figure out, like, I feel like if you have an opportunity to sign Isco, you do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you do it and you figure it out. That's that squad depth. You're right. And he doesn't. The idea that Isco wouldn't be a starter for us, to me, is kind of funny because I'm not really sure formation wise if we would change some things to accommodate him, or if he would be that third like midfielder in you know 4-3-3, if he would fit in with Decore and Alan, if he would be that third player, which I feel like he's more of a creator rather than a defensive player. But at the same time, again, I feel like if you can get Isco, you get him because I think he's a type of player we don't have much of, and that's a creator. He is good in tight space, and he creates chances. My question about Ntiti is he's a center back.
Yeah.
And I feel like our depth at center back is one of the only places where – we got center backs. So if we bring him in, I would say we need somebody to leave. I don't know who that would be. And if it's a situation where that happens, okay, cool. But again, like, I feel like Holgate, Godfrey, and Branthwaite, all three of those are young players. They may go out on loan, but they'll have to come back.
Yeah.
If they go out on loan, they will be coming back. So, you know, and I feel like they're good investments. You know, and they're, you know, and Godfrey, a little bit more size than Holgate, but both are speed players. Branthwaite is kind of a mold of like a Michael Keane type, who's a big breakup play, wins those 50-50s, but also a pretty good passer type. And then you got Michael Keane and Yerry Mina. We got pretty good depth. And so, So that's why, like, I'm a little curious about the MTT connection. I don't know. I'm just not sure why. But again, is he a good player? Yes.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic player. I do think he maybe is a little on the injury prone side from what I understand about him. But I don't know, man. I think some people would have to make room, and I fear they would be some good investments that we've made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, I tend to agree with the Umtiti thing, which is why I've mostly focused on Isco.
That's what I was going to do, is just focus on Isco.
I agree. And the fear of moving somebody that has made strides, like one of the young guys that you mentioned, that have made strides on the squad, does that hurt their confidence? Or, you know, if we loan somebody out and they play well when they come back, like you said, who are we moving? Now we're stuck, you know? That's a tough one.
I mean,
I still say we go five. I still say we go five, though. I think that was the answer, right?
So I've been predicting we finish fourth for a while now. I don't want to be a flippy flopper.
Yeah, so stick to it.
I have to stick to it because I still think it's possible, but I just don't like our depth at all. I've not liked it since the beginning. And I guess my hopes were that we were maybe going to be fortunate with the injuries, but especially fixtures coming in December, they're going to be coming thick and fast.
Yeah.
And I'm curious as to how we're going to hold it together. And if it's with duct tape, cool, you know, but as long as we know how we're going to hold it together,
because
there are times where you're like, oh geez, how, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I feel like that lineup was a very duct tape type of lineup.
Oh yeah. Definitely. I mean, yeah, for sure.
Anyway. Okay. That's our mailbag.
Hey.
All right. Final segment.
Burnley.
Burnley preview. Current form is 19th in the table. 1-2-6 with 5 points. Their previous five matches, most recent one was a 5-0 loss to City. Before that, they had a 1-0 win over Palace. And before that, a 0-0. And before that was a 0-0 draw with Brighton. Burnley. It's funny. Like I always tell my kids, I'm like, Burnley scraps and they find a way to stay in, and they usually do it by two types of results, 0-0 and 1-0. That's usually what happens, is they just hold people off, or they lose by one, or they win by one, and that is a Burnley season under Sean Dyche. And you know what? It keeps them in the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know? Possible starters, I think we're looking at like Nick Pope. And in the back, Lowton, Tarkowski, and Ben Mee. Tarkowski and Mee have actually been a pretty solid partnership for a while now. I'm actually surprised that neither one of those guys has moved on by now. They're, you know, pretty solid center backs for the most part. You always hear rumors with them, and they stay. Charlie Taylor, who we actually connected with for a while a few years ago, running across the midfield, Goodmanson, Westwood, Brownhill, and McNeil. And you probably see Jay Rodriguez and Chris Wood. So I always feel like Burnley defends well. And I don't want to necessarily say hit you on the counter, but because I don't think necessarily they're like a straight up speed team. They're just a bunch of solid guys who play stout defense, who don't screw around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
These are the types of matches that I get scared of, because the longer it goes nil, the more I fear something goes awry. Right. And a 0-0 drawn out game is exactly the match that they want to play. And being as solid as they are, they could hold that ship for a long, long, long time. Mm-hmm. And the way to snap them out of that is for someone like DCL to get a nice whipped in cross or a nice athletic move to the goal and score that goal, get them going, and someone like Richarlison too. Those two guys need to be aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll pull off the victory though on this one.
I would love to see us get a lead early to try to draw them, you know, try to loosen them up a bit to where they feel like they need a goal, to feel like they need to score to get the points from the match. I would really like to see that, because I feel like a Burnley that's down is a Burnley that is not. I feel like they're just so much more comfortable with an even score. You know, they're just level-headed. They know who they are. They have an identity.
Yeah.
That and that's something that I feel like we had at the beginning of the season. Our identity is still getting lots of chances. We still produce chances, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
But defensively, I feel like we just don't have as much of an identity due to our lack of depth. Mm-hmm. And right now, they know who they are. They have some stability in the back.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Just to harken on your point, it's a matter of getting ahead early. I want to see a ball to DCL. That way he gets going. Once he gets going, I think, because they're going to play defensively. They're going to welcome us a little bit, and I think just punching him in the mouth right on the get-go is the way to have him move, spread out, you know, kind of create that space where we can hopefully score another goal. I think we need to try and pile it on them, because the longer the match stays nil-nil, the more that plays into their hands.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, do you remember, this is a silly thing to say. I'm just going to say it out loud, though, because I feel like being silly for a second. But do you remember Shaquille O'Neal's, Shaq's nickname for Tim Duncan? Do you remember what it was?
No. I thought you were gonna
the big fundamental.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the big fundamental. I thought you were gonna say Eric Dampier when they called him Erica, but that was
but the big fundamental. And whenever I think Burnley, I just think fundamentals, the big fundamental, every single time, because they just do everything they're supposed to do.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
they're not about, like, I look at a player like Chris Wood. He's big. He holds players off, and he wins balls in the air. He's good. He's decent at hold up play. He's not flash. He's not going to sit there and burn you with speed necessarily, going around you 1v1. But he'll muscle you off the ball and get a you know, crack a shot off or win a ball in the air by sitting there being brawny. You know, I just feel like it's a fundamentally sound squad that just does the little things. And that helps them win and draw. Now,
and those balls in the air worry me. Those balls in the air worry me with our defensive depth.
Yeah, I would agree on that. And I don't know if it's good. I think certain teams playing them after a loss is not cool. You don't want to play that. You don't want to play. I mean, Burnley just lost 5-0 to City. So are they in disarray? Are they going to be pissed off? That's my question. And I don't know the answer. I don't know a lot about the personality of this Burnley team, but I feel like I know a little bit about Sean Dyche, and I feel like Sean Dyche would be pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'd be like, you know what? That was embarrassing. Screw that. That's not happening again. So he may have them pumped up. Just saying.
All right. Yeah.
Who do you think we're starting? And how do you think we're rolling? With the assumption that maybe Luka Dean and Luka Dean is not going to be in. We know that.
Yeah, yeah.
But Seamus Coleman may not be back.
Yeah, I think this is where we'll see someone like Nkunku at least maybe on the bench and come in. I think we'll be able to see him, because I think Carlo, I feel like there's still an experimental side to what is happening with Carlo, hence starting Davies and Iwobi on the wing backs. I think the way he sees it is, I'm not I'm not, my job is not in jeopardy as of yet. We're not in a free for all yet. I say yet as if it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. Why not shake things up a bit based on the personnel we have just to see who is useful for the next match? Because the next match is, would be a big one. It's the Chelsea match.
Yeah. So first off, every once in a while, Carlo will do that rotation thing and start a different keeper.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I get the feeling that he may go with Pickford one more time just before we start getting into the real heart of the December fixtures. But don't be shocked. Don't be shocked if he says, you know, this is a Jonas Lösel or a Robin Olsen game.
Robin, yeah.
You know what I mean? You never know.
Yeah.
And Olsen did not play poorly in the match he played.
I would love to see him, to be honest. I want to see more of him, to be honest.
Yeah. But I like the idea that he does rotate that sometimes. But if he feels like Pickford is hitting a decent run of form and he's not playing poorly, then maybe he'll just keep him in if he doesn't actually need to rest him yet. Because it's about to be a time in the next few weeks, in the coming weeks, where he's going to need to rest.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's when the rotation will happen. You think we're going three at the back again?
The 3/5.
Yeah.
You know, again, not, you know, the tactician in me is not the best. I want to say that we will not go three in the back this time. I want to say that we go four, but do we have the personnel for that? That's the part, you know, does he risk that? You know, because then what happens when it doesn't work and you have to then, you know, sub somebody out, you're kind of strapped and you gotta sub someone that may add some dynamic,
right,
you know, dynamic element to the offense or the defense. You know what? I'm gonna amend my answer. I say yes, we go 3/5 in the back because, again, it's the duct tape thing. We really don't have much, man. We don't have much to play with. So yeah, it's gonna, I think it's gonna go be back to that 3/5, and what we'll see is probably it will be Davies' positions swap it, as in they'll switch sides, but some different personnel at least in one of those positions.
Interesting. Okay, so I think you worded it kind of the way in a way that I identify with. You said, I want to say that he's going to go with four in the back. And I want to say that too. I really want to.
Yeah.
I wish it was a situation where, I mean, I would actually even, I mean, and again, I thought Iwobi did all right. I did. I would love to see Nkunku in there at left. And I wouldn't completely mind Davies in there at right. I wouldn't mind Jonjo Kinney in there at right, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
You know, just to, I just want to see. I mean, we kept him for a reason. I would love to see him get some time. I mean, how is Jonjo Kinney these days? Is he okay?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I've got to agree with you. I think it's gonna be three in the back. I think we're gonna see Godfrey Keane Holgate again, unless for some reason Carlo wants to rotate Mina in and kind of keep the center backs rotating for some reason. But yeah, one would think he would want some form of stability for communication purposes.
Yes.
Gosh, I hate saying this, man. I don't like saying this. I don't think he's going to change anything in the starting line.
Yeah. I'm trying to be edgy, but
I'm a huge fan of somebody saying I try to be edgy. When in reality, like I say, I try to be edgy, and you're like, really, Jerry?
No, you know, man. I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to at least, you know, make, you know, maybe come with a hot take, but I get the scary feeling, not scary. It actually might be better for us. I get the feeling that you're right. I think it's likely that we'll see the exact same setup, the exact same formation with the exact same personnel. Maybe a change on the get subbed in, though. That's what I think might we might see a change in. And I'm hoping that Nkunku is on the bench and maybe see him come in at some point.
I'd love to see Carlo show a little confidence in him, but yeah. You know, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it though, and I was like, how poor was our performance? It wasn't super poor.
Yeah.
It wasn't a super poor performance. And that kind of makes me wonder if he's going to change anything, if it was that bad. Did Carlo think it was that bad? And I don't think he thought we played that poor of a game.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes me wonder. Now, the only thing that gives me pause is the fact that Leeds is a highly attacking team. They're very attacking, which means going with a more defensive formation does make sense. Burnley, I don't immediately think high-paced attack.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to think more, you know, route one, but it's what I tend to think. Maybe that's unfair to Burnley's style this season. But that's what I tend to think. So if that's the case, maybe Carlo's like, you know what? Let's run four at the back because I'm not as worried about Burnley's ball movement as I was with Leeds. Maybe.
Yeah.
That would be adjusting based on the opposition rather than just adjusting based on our availability. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Curious. I don't know the answers.
Yeah.
But my prediction stands that it's the same starters.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Saying that out loud, but
yeah, I'm gonna go with that one. Just to be safe and also to cover my ass because I am not the tactician expert. I'm not the tactics expert. Someone is gonna get on Twitter and they're gonna tell me, "Oh, you shouldn't even be talking about this stuff." And I'm gonna come back with a snarky answer because I'm not gonna let anyone talk to me that way. But you know, you know how it is. Sometimes you wake up that morning and you see. You see that lineup come in, and you're like, whoa, you know, something's pleasantly surprising, or whoa, I did not expect that. I'm not sure about that. So,
yeah. And there are times where I've been excited and it's just gone so poorly in the past. Yeah. I'm like, oh, finally,
yeah.
We're going to see that pairing. And then,
that's why we don't see them.
So what's going to happen? What's the score going to be? And who's going to win? Is it?
I'm going to say 2-0 Everton.
And I, true to form, based on what I always say about Burnley, I'm going to say it's a 1-0, but that we win. All right? Because I picked us to draw with Leeds last time, and it was such a negative pick, and who knew it wasn't negative enough. So, it's just, honestly, I like your 2-0 pick over Burnley better, though. Because I feel like if we get a 2-0 lead on them, we're okay.
Yeah.
But I worry about a 1-0 lead against Burnley. I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, the idea of having to kind of hold on against a team that finds a way. They're just crafty.
Yeah.
They find little nooks and crannies in your defense. And it's just and it's from these bizarre angles. And yeah.
It's like a bend don't break kind of defense as well. Like, you know, inviting balls, but just like – clearing everything and just that's solid. This is very solid in the back.
It just hit me. No English people are going to get this joke or this reference. You remember John Fox, the coach for the Panthers back in the day?
Yeah, of course.
That was how, when he went to the Super Bowl, that's how John Fox teams played.
Oh, yeah.
Not much attack. They scored just enough to win. Very conservative and hardcore defense. And he always used to say, it is what it is. And I could totally hear Sean Dyche saying that for some reason.
Yeah.
Such a weird reference. But yeah, I just did it. I'm sorry. Anyway. Okay. We're both picking wins on this one.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes that's the curse of death.
Yeah.
All right. So it happens. So we're at the end of the show. We made
it.
Jordan, you survived time with Jerry. Congratulations.
Hot seat, huh?
I feel like we need to send you a certificate or something.
Yeah.
So Jordan, want to make sure I said thank you, Jordan. Is there anything we need to promote for you? A plug for Jordan besides the Vice City Evertonians?
Yeah, just follow us on Twitter, Instagram. You can find me on Facebook, although my primary platform for Vice City is definitely Twitter. We are definitely loud on Twitter. I think we're one of the most unique Evertonians supporters club out there. We have a lot of Latin people in our, I think we are majority Latino.
That's awesome.
in our supporters group. If you look at my Twitter handle, we got the flag of the United States, the Colombian flag, the Brazilian flag, and the Cuban flag, just to represent pretty much our membership, you know. Yeah, hit us up, man. We're fun on Twitter. We like to get into it with some Reds, and I show no fear on Twitter, so
I admire you. I do everything I can to avoid like negative Twitter exchanges because I'm just like, they suck my life away. So I'm just like, oh, I can't.
I feel like just like the fact that I could hide behind that it's Vice City EFC on Twitter and not Jordan Sanchez, I think it helps a little bit. But
nice.
You know, just some, for example, perfect example today. Somebody, you know, obviously the Chico Azul on yes. Twitter, amazing dude. Yes. He actually lived in Cuba for several years, ironically enough. We had a great conversation about that.
You've interacted with Chico Azul?
Oh yeah, definitely.
I'm sorry, I'm geeking out a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm an ardent admirer, not only of his writing, but just comedy in general.
Oh yeah, he has a gift. He has a gift. Somebody hit him up on Twitter about how the reason why Liverpool doesn't have that many season ticket holders for this phase was because they have more global supporters, and Everton has zero. And of course, I have to back up my boy. And I, with my snarky comment, I said, hey, from Miami here in the U.S., just in case you didn't know, I can confirm that you are talking nonsense. And that just had a string of replies.
Of course.
Of course. The Reds are going after me. And I live for that. I live for that, especially if it's the Reds.
Yeah, well, you've got my respect on that one then, my friend. All right. So continuing the plugging. Make sure, check out if you're in the Miami area, check out Vice City Everton. And even if you don't, you should probably just be following them in general if you're an Everton supporter, just to see all the hot takes.
Yeah, and if you're in the area, come by too. We're opening up here in Miami. We don't have as many people coming out for obvious reasons. But every so often, we have a few guys from Merseyside. In fact, he's not a member of ours, but his name is Danny. He works in the cruise ship industry, and he's in Miami every once in a while from Merseyside, and he'll join us for a game. Miami Beach being the tourist destination that it is, we'll always run into a few Evertonians that want to meet up with us. So, yeah, wherever you're from, near and far, you're always welcome. Even if you don't support Everton, we'd love to have you.
Very cool. Jeez. That'll sound fun. So there you go. Jordan's plug and the Vice City Evertonians. So check all that out. I have other stuff to plug now. We got to make sure I have responsibility to the Toffee Blues to mention, if you're going to be getting anything from Everton Direct for Christmas, please click on the link in the description. There's advantages for Toffee Blues and potentially for yourself in this particular circumstance. So anyway, click on the link. It would help us out. We'd greatly appreciate it. So there's a plug thing. Also, check out the Toffee Blues website. There's lots of Everton-based content on there, all things Everton. There's a lot of Toffee Blues contributors that are writing stories on there. So you'll see their faces on here or hear their voices on the podcast, but you'll see their actual writing and their brain droppings about Everton on the Toffee Blues website. Also follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And one last plug, I wrote a children's book, Randolph the Christmas Moose. It came because Max and Terry on the Toffee Blue View back in the day, Christmas episode, I mistook a reindeer for a moose, and all of a sudden, this happened.
I did not know that story.
Yes, and it turned into me writing a children's book, my buddy Matt Taylor illustrating it. It's my first kid's book, and it's really fun. It's about a moose who likes to run. It's a moose wearing a headband. What else you got? You know what I mean? So anyway, please check it out. It's about, being able to figure out a way to do what you want in life and doing it for your own reasons. So yeah, I'd appreciate it. Available on Amazon, but probably some other places too. Yeah, so that's it. Ladies and gentlemen, Jordan, thanks so much. Appreciate it, buddy.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It was awesome. I had a great time.
This was really fun, man. Really fun. I really hope you can come on again.
Absolutely. And, you tell me when. I'm there.
Very cool. Actually, it hit me about, by the way, for those of you listening via podcast, you can't see, but if you're watching, I don't know if you can see behind Jordan, it hit me about two-thirds of the way through. There's a totally Ninja Turtle posters, and I didn't know that's what it was. The whole time, I was like, what is that? And then I was like, oh, my God, it's Michelangelo in Italian pizza. Oh my God. Yeah, and there's Wrath. So, yeah, sorry, I just got that because old brain. But anyway, oddly enough, I was more focused on the person. Isn't that weird? Yes. So bring your Ninja Turtle posters.
Jordan. Oh, I got another one for the next one that I got to show you. Another frame that I have. I've shown it on social media, so some people might be familiar with it, but it's a cool one.
I'm totally excited, man. Very cool. Very cool. All right. So for all you Evertonians out there, thanks so much for watching. Thanks so much for listening. Much love to all of you. Let's get 3 points at Burnley. Let's somehow beat up on the big fundamental. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, everybody. Much love. Bye. That was a bad throw. Bye.